This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about engineering better humans. But first, up first, genetics in the courtroom. What if a defendant claims to be schizophrenic and says having the disease means he didn't have intent to commit the crime? Should the judge accept a genetic test to back up the claim? How about this? Should a judge be able to order a genetic test? Say an obstetrician is being sued for an infant's disability. Can the court compel the parent to have their child tested to determine whether that disability is the result of a genetic condition and not the doctor's action? Sound like the scenarios of the future? They're not. For example, earlier this month, an NBA player with a previously diagnosed irregular heartbeat refused his team's request to undergo a genetic test for a potentially fatal heart condition. Now, that case didn't go to court, and the player was traded to another team, but it did. But if it did, could a judge force the basketball player to take the test? We are living in a brave new world of genetics, and these days, genetic tests are making their way out of the clinical setting into the workplace, and, of course, that means into the court system. When should judges admit or compel genetic tests? Are there any guidelines or rules for judges to follow in these matters? That's what we'll be talking about right now in this part of the hour. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guest. Diane Hoffman is a professor of law and the director of the Law and Healthcare Program at the University of Maryland School of Law in Baltimore. She's a co-author of a paper on genetic tests in the courtroom published in today's issue of the journal Science. It's entitled, When Should Judges Admit or Compel Genetic Tests? She joins us by phone from her office. Welcome to the program, Professor Hoffman.
Thank you.
Why did you feel compelled yourself to write this paper?
Well, my co-author, Karen Rothenberg, and I had been studying and writing about other non-clinical uses of genetic information and genetic for what it can tell us about the health status or future health status of an individual. And we'd looked at it in the employment and insurance context and had been hearing about some anecdotes and in the literature and some cases that had been surfacing in the courts where the courts were in fact ordering these tests. For example, there was a case regarding child custody where the father of the child asked the judge to order the mother to be tested for Huntington's disease, arguing that if she was going to have the disease, she would not be able to adequately parent the child. And the mother did not want to have the test and fled the jurisdiction. And
the terrible consequences she might have faced just knowing.
Right, exactly. Many people do not want to know
right.
That they may develop the disease. And so this presents, you know, a real potentially psychologically devastating kind of information for individuals that they would not want to know.
So did the court want her to take the test and she fled?
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And so that was kind of troublesome. And then we started to do a little bit of research and to see what was out there. In fact, what kind of case, other
yeah.
kinds of cases were the court seeing? So a lot of them are coming up primarily in the civil context, personal injury cases, cases like the obstetrician who is allegedly negligent during a birth process, and the parents are suing him or her, and he says, no, it wasn't. I didn't commit negligence. This is a genetic condition that your child has, Fragile X or something else, and he asks the judge, again, to compel the parents to have the child tested, or even toxic tort litigation where maybe it's in the workplace where a pregnant woman is exposed to chemicals and child is born with disabilities, and again, she's suing for the chemical manufacturer, and the manufacturer also says it wasn't, you know, due to the chemical exposure, it's a genetic condition.
Right.
So we were seeing those kinds of cases.
Well, what is fundamentally different in these cases? Because, you know, in court, because we know that courts require people to take all kinds of different tests, mental health or physical health tests, you know, to be evaluated by a psychiatrist.
Right.
Why are these cases different?
Well, I think in some circumstances they are similar to judges ordering a mental or physical exam, but genetic tests do raise other kinds of concerns that some other kinds of medical exams do not. For example, they reveal information that is maybe significant to family members of the tested person that they would not have wanted to know. And there, for a number of these genetic tests, at least now in our current development of the tests and current level of the therapeutics that have been developed, we're not there yet. So we may know that someone has a predisposition, may develop a disease, but there's no cure or treatment yet.
Right.
So for at least many of these genetic conditions, the information that you may develop this, untreatable, incurable disease would have these pretty devastating psychological effects.
So are judges now in uncharted territory, whether to ask for a test or to accept a test?
They have their general guidelines as to when they can relevance and when they could compel a test, but there are no specific guidelines in this area for genetic testing. This is all quite new, and there's still very few cases that have come to the courts, at least that we were able to find. Published opinions, there seem to be less than a dozen, and then we looked at a database of cases on jury verdicts and settlements and for about a 8-year period and only found about 40 cases that surfaced. So they're still very new. But even the general guidelines that judges have, for example, about whether to compel tests in a civil case, are pretty... There aren't a lot of guidelines there. They can compel them for good cause,
yeah.
And that's real well defined.
Yeah, you surveyed just about all the trial court judges, state and federal, in Maryland.
That's correct.
And you came up with some interesting results where, in some cases, and let's talk about this, the two hypothetical cases. One was based on a criminal case about a schizophrenia case.
Right.
And you found that judges would equally rule on both sides.
Yeah, I think this was a tough case for the judges. I think this was to where the defendant actually wanted to have the test admitted. It wasn't being compelled.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to admit it to show that they did not have the requisite intent to commit the crime. And in the facts that we gave them, the test, they found that it was not sufficiently conclusive because only 50-60% of individuals with the gene would manifest the symptoms by
right.
the age of the defendant. So I think that was part of the concern that some of the judges had.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, I think they felt this was a gray area, and they also were concerned about how the juries would interpret this information and whether or not they might give it too much weight in their deliberations.
Yeah. There's also must be a factor about how do you judge if a test is good enough to be admitted?
Right, exactly. Know? And that's a first hurdle. That's the first question judges are going to ask, or will it meet the threshold test for scientific evidence, which is different in different jurisdictions, but often it's a Daubert test, and they have to ask, is the test reliable and valid, and those kinds of, is it good enough? We actually said, assume it's good enough. We were more interested in the kinds of balancing that judges have mm-hmm. to do about when they admit, the kind of, are there prejudicial factors that make it, it's so prejudicial that it wouldn't have its overriding the probative value of the information.
1-800-989-8255. Let me see if I can get one question. And Alan in Nevada City, California. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I had just wanted to point out that there's a lot of precedent for this kind of thing in pre-employment drug testing.
Mm-hmm.
And that... sometimes there can be, for example, if you're testing for impairment versus testing for, a history of something, there are certain metabolites that maintain in the body for a long time after, for example, using marijuana that you can test for, and they're starting to do things like test, people in vehicles, and they could be, stone sober and still be, according to the tests, they could be arrested. So There's a lot of precedence in the pre-employment, especially.
Mm-hmm. Professor Hoffman?
Yes, and as I said, when we started to look at this, we had been concerned because this testing had a lot of issues had been raised about using genetic testing in the employment and insurance context. And there have been some response by state legislatures to try to limit the circumstances under which they can be used in those circumstances. And this, again, is another forum that we're seeing. And I think, again, the concern is that these tests were established really for purposes of diagnosing and treating patients. So when people go to the doctor and they're trying to decide, should I have one of these tests?
Right.
Maybe they need to start to, you know, understand. We've talked about that there may be circumstances when they may have to share them with employers or insurers if the state doesn't prevent that in some way by its laws. And now maybe we should be telling them that maybe in some court cases they'd have to have it admitted if they actually have the test. So
jurists have to really get educated on what these the implications are for these things.
Exactly. And I think the issue here is that it's very fact-specific, that it depends, and is it in the criminal context, is it in the civil context, is it in the guilt or innocence phase, is it in the sentencing phase, is it causation, is it damages, and what kind of test is it? Is it a test for something like Huntington's disease, where there's, if you have the gene, there's, you know, almost 100% certainty that you will develop the condition, versus, you know, a genetic testing
right.
for type of breast cancer, where
right.
the penetrance is much lower, or the probability that you'll develop the cancer is much mm-hmm. lower.
Diane Hoffman, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us. We have run out of time, but thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome.
Diane Hoffman is a professor of law and the director of the Law and Healthcare Program at the University of Maryland School of Law in Baltimore, publishing a paper, When Should Judges Admit or Compel Genetic Tests, out this week in the journal Science. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk about making the perfect person. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.